Good morning. Welcome to the May 18th, 2022 Education Conference Committee, K-12 Education Conference Committee. I am State Representative Jim Davney, Chair of the House Education Finance Committee. Mr. Lee, would you please take the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Davney.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Sandstead.
Present.
Representative Hassan.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Ms. Donovan, can you do the same for the Senate, please?
Certainly. Senator Eichhorn.
Eichhorn, present.
Senator Chamberlain. Senator Coleman. Senator Duckworth.
Here.
Senator Weaker.
Here.
Thank you, Ms. Donovan. So we do have quorum of both bodies. I appreciate that. Sorry that Senator Chamberlain is not able to join us today, but Senator Eichhorn, thank you for stepping in.
Very welcome.
All right. It's good whether we're it's good to gather this morning for this work that the people of Minnesota have asked us to do, whether folks are here in person or virtually. I still marvel at the technology that allows for that. Senator Eichhorn is as chair today for the Senate conferees. We appreciated, the House appreciated receiving the Senate offer yesterday afternoon. We particularly appreciated seeing the Senate adopting the special education cross subsidy as a shared priority. As I think you know, we've argued as the House that stepping up as the legislature to pay for what we tell districts to do is our first responsibility and a place where we have seriously lagged for many years. The House has consistently led on this priority because students deserve to have access to the resources that they need to succeed. We think that's key to a Minnesota where everyone can thrive. One key difference that I hope the Senate will come towards the House on today is that we have also prioritized the English language learner cross subsidy. This was also a priority of Senator Weber's. He carried the bill that Representative Herr discussed on Monday, I believe that was. Everything we can say about the importance of paying our bills regarding the special education cross-subsidy is also true of the English language learner cross-subsidy. And if we are actually serious about literacy, we need to be serious about the ELL cross-subsidy because English is what that is all about. We've listened to students, parents, and school staff this year in the House, and we've heard one clear message. The kids are not all right. This isn't new, as we've explored in conference committee. It's been a concern for a number of years, and from time to time, the legislature has stepped forward and provided additional resources for student well-being and mental health. But this concern about students' well-being is rising to a level that calls us to action now. Our dedicated money for school districts to hire more school support personnel of all types is key for meeting the mental health needs of our students. Their well-being and their mental health is key to their learning. It all fits together pieces of the puzzle. Senator Eichhorn and Senate conferees, the leadership expects us to have an agreement done today. I hope that it's this conference committee that is the group that is able to reach that agreement. It is all of us who have spent the past months listening to Minnesotans about their aspirations and concerns regarding our students and schools. The majority leader has not been in those hearings and meetings. The speaker has not been in those hearings and meetings. The governor has not been in those hearings and meetings. It's up to us, and I hope that we are able to reach consensus on a bill that reflects the voices we have heard from across the state. Senator Eichhorn, in order to assure the Senate conferees have a fuller appreciation of the House's latest proposal, I want to turn the meeting over to my conferees to touch on a few key highlights, the issues in our proposal that they have been working on, sometimes for years, where they have a depth of knowledge. Senator Eichhorn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would be helpful as well if we could have staff kind of do an in-deep dive of your offer so our conferees can fully understand what it is you're offering and we can digest it a little bit more. If we could do that, I think that would be helpful for the public as well.
I think that's an excellent suggestion, Senator Eichhorn. Ms. Beckel, is that you who would be the best person to walk through the spreadsheet?
Mr.
Ms. Beckel.
Can you hear me?
Not well. Would you be able to come forward? That whole Zoom thing. Thank you, Ms. Beckel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, would you like me to go through all of the fiscal changes in the bill?
I believe that's the request of the Senate, so please.
Okay, please allow me to pull up the correct spreadsheet that will show those changes, and then I will share my screen. Okay, so in order to show the changes from the previous offer, I will be referring to this spreadsheet, and the yellow highlighted items are the items that have changed from the previous offer, from the House's May 15th offer. All right, on line 8, expanding access to online learning, the House has come down to the Senate's position. Line 9, extended time revenue for students in residential programs. The House has come down to the Senate's position.
Ms. Beckel?
Yes.
Could you instead walk us through the House changes spreadsheet updated 2022-05-17 at 9:34? PM. I think that's the document that has been distributed to members.
Certainly.
And I think that's a little bit more focused for the members and the public. So our offer sheet of yesterday. Yes.
Okay, so you'd just like me to go through the House position?
If you would, please, Ms. Beckel. Thank you.
Of course, I apologize. Line 4, the House has access to menstrual products funding in at $1.7 million in the first in fiscal year 23 and $3.781 million in the tails. Line 5, the House proposes $5 million in fiscal year 23 only. Line 7, the English learner cross-subsidy aid. The House proposes $47.57 million in fiscal year 23 and $97.255 million in the tails. Line 10, the average daily membership changes for children with disabilities. The House recommends funding this at $511 in fiscal year 23 and $1.3 million in the tails. Line 11, the levy equalization, this is equalizing the levy for the continuation of existing voluntary pre-kindergarten seats. This has a cost of $6.09 million in the tails. Line 12, provision of special instruction, increasing the age to 22. This has a cost in the general education area of $3.661 million. Line 13, this is the making the existing voluntary pre-kindergarten seats permanent. This has a cost of $39.416 million in the TALES. Line 15, transportation sparsity aid. The House proposes funding this at $2.238 million in fiscal year 23 and $4.253 million in the TALES. Line 17, consolidation transition aid increase. The House proposes funding this at $810,000 in fiscal year 23 and $90,000 in fiscal year 24. The House includes the English learner cross-subsidy reduction aid decrease of $2 million per year, simply removing what was put in the 2021 session. Moving to education excellence, the House includes funding for the American Indian Education Aid increase at $3.12 million in fiscal year 23 and $7.064 million in the TALES. The House proposal includes Bold Literacy, which is funded at $4.75 million in fiscal year 23 and $9.5 million in the TALES. These proposals include letters, the literacy unit administration, expanding literacy and dyslexia data collection, and the state library services. Line 30, the House proposes funding the computer science blueprint at $20,000 per year. Ethnic studies implementation. This has costs of $576,000 in fiscal year 23 and $925,000 in the TALES. Line 34, ethnic studies school grants. The House proposes funding this at $500,000 per year in the TALES. Line 38, the Minnesota Association of Alternative Program STARS chapter. The House funds at $45,000 in fiscal year 23. Line 40, the Minnesota Math Corps program increase would be $500,000 each year of the TALES. Line 41, the House proposal includes the multi-tiered systems of support. This has costs of $13.25 million in fiscal year 23 and $27.24 million in the TALES. And this proposal includes appropriations for the Minnesota Department of Education, the regional centers and service cooperatives, districts, charters, and co-ops for implementation of the multi-tiered systems of support, another appropriation for letters, building assets reducing risks center, tribal state relations for statewide implementation, and then an appropriation to the UMN Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement. Line 48, the House proposes $1 million of spending in fiscal year 23 for Network for the Children of African Descent. Line 49 and 50, the House is just allowing extra flexibility for the SANA Foundation's appropriation from the previous session. Moving down to teachers, line 58, the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color program would have an increase of $2 million in fiscal year 23 and $4 million in the TALES. Line 60, the Grow Your Own increase would have costs of $25.509 million in fiscal year 23, and that is a change from the previous offer, and then in the TALES, $24.23 million. Line 61, the Minnesota Science Teachers Association would receive $611,000 in fiscal year 23 only. Line 62, the non-exclusionary discipline training increase proposed is $5 million each year ongoing. Line 63, this is the 1%, the 61% of the special education due process preparation time appropriation. This is $18.23 million in fiscal year 23 and $16.832 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. The special education part of the bill includes appropriations for the provision of special instruction, increasing that age to 22. There's a larger component of this in the general education part of the bill, so this is just $21,000 in the TALES. Line 67, the Registry of Interpreters for the Deaf certification. This would have costs of $580,000 in the TALES only. Line 68, the special education cross-subsidy reduction aid increase. The House increased the amount it put toward this to $96.281 million in fiscal year 23 and $227.395 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. The special education due process prep time, this is the 39% of that appropriation, and that is $26.025 million in the tails. The House includes the long-term facilities maintenance aid increase of $14.4 million in the tails, as well as the health and safety items concerning mental health. Line 77, the Level 4 Mental Health Innovative Grant Program, the House funds this at $9 million per year. Line 78, mental health leads. The House funds this at $226,000 in fiscal year 23 and $602,000 in the tails. Line 79, the student support personnel aid. The House increases this funding as well to $26.718 million and $63.811 million in the tails. In nutrition, the House includes funding for reducing disparities for young children with disabilities for breakfast funding. This has a cost of $172,000 in fiscal year 23 and $344,000 in fiscal years 24 and 25. The school meals aid proposed by the House has costs of $18.546 million in fiscal year 23 and $27.938 million in the tails. In early education, the House proposal includes early learning scholarships funding at additional funding at $31.447 million in fiscal year 23 and $43.553 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. Line 99, mental health services and early childhood social workers, the House proposes $2.5 million in spending per year ongoing. Line 101, Reach Out and Read, Minnesota. The House proposes funding, the increasing funding for this item at $250,000 per year ongoing. For the Department of Education, the specific learning disability criteria change provision has costs of $540,000 in fiscal year 23 and $1.08 million in the tails. Moving down to the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, the House offer includes education online licensing system improvements that has a cost of $660,000 in fiscal year 23 and $728,000 in fiscal years 24 and 25. Then the House also includes the Compensatory Education Working Group and the Special Education Working Group, and these both have costs of $23,000 in fiscal year 23 only for the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Finally, the House includes the State Academy's rental revenue change that would result in a reduction of $3,000 per year to the general fund.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. Appreciate that walkthrough. Chair Eichhorn, I think just briefly point out that obviously in the interest of getting to agreement, we have come down on a number of items that had been priorities. We came up on a number of items that we saw, for instance, the special education cross-subsidy that we can expand, hopefully, the base of shared priorities here. So I'm hoping that the Senate is recognizing that we're moving towards hopefully consensus. We also increased our commitment to mental health and student well-being because of the priority we're continuing to hear from parents, students, and school staff on that. We also, of course, as the Senate had policy provisions in your offer, we have policy provisions in ours. This is supposed to be a policy year. That's what we said last year. That's what we say every year, but I wanted to make sure that the policy priorities get touched on. So Representative Sandsteed, before we get to the policy, you wanted to touch on a few fiscal items that were important from your perspective. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. I have taken a little bit of time to look at both the Senate bill and the House bill, and I want to start by thanking both bodies for recognizing the need for improvements in literacy, and I'm glad that we have consensus around that area. I do want to just kind of make an analogy between education and physical health. When we think about, take for instance, a cardiac patient who is in crisis, they seek intervention, they go to a doctor, and that doctor prioritizes what has to happen and starts with the immediate need of resolving a clot, taking care of surgery, whatever needs to happen, but the care does not stop there. What happens after that is a regimen, a follow-up of perhaps a medication regimen, certain dietary changes, an exercise regimen, in order to get that individual back to a healthy state. And in education, we have a very similar situation. If we talk about literacy, which we can agree upon, the need for improvements there, we can't just throw a curriculum or a program at a district or our students and expect success and significant changes without those comprehensive follow-ups. And what I see right now is the cost to districts around special ed cross-subsidy, ELL cross-subsidy, is taking a huge bite out of a district's budget. And when it comes to special ed cross-subsidies, these are costs that a district cannot predict. These are, we've heard over and over again how unpredictable these costs are from one year to another. When we think about the mental health needs of our students and our staff, we can't expect success with literacy and turn a blind eye to the mental health needs of our students. When we look at even early childhood and other provisions, and I'm going to go as far as even talking about transportation sparsity, right now there are districts across the state that are operating in a deficit. Forest Lake right now, I think, is $500,000 a year operating in a deficit. Bemidji is $800,000 a year. And those are real dollars to a district that could be using that money to put people, qualified educators, in front of our students to help with the literacy needs and other needs. When our body is sick, when one part of our body is sick, the whole suffers. When one part of our education system is sick, the whole suffers. And right now, we have many things. We've heard throughout the course of this legislative session many parts of education that need attention. So focusing on literacy alone, just alone, will fall short. And I think we need to do a better job in recognizing that health is complex and education is complex. We can't focus on one issue alone without recognizing the impact on others and vice versa. And I can say with authority as an educator myself in the classroom, when a district is suffering financially, the academics will start to suffer as well because they cannot put the proper adults in front of our students, whether it's supports, whether it's mental health workers or educators themselves. And so I, again, applaud the work of the Senate and the House on literacy, but we have to go further. We cannot stop there. We have a surplus right now that could be well used. We don't have to spend every drop of it or every penny of it, but we do have the ability right now to address real needs in our school districts for our students to make real differences. So I appreciate the work that we're doing. I hope that we can come up with a proposal that is far more comprehensive than what we've received to date, because isolating one issue alone is not going to solve the problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sandstead. Got to watch out for elementary teachers. They're fierce. Representative Hassan.
Thank you,
Morning, Mr. Chair, and members. I just want to take this time to uplift something that is near and dear to my heart. And anyone who has like heard me talk about this in the last few years that I've been here, only been here, what, this is my fourth year, knows how I feel about this. It's the increasing the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in this final provision. Increasing teachers of color and American Indian teachers is crucial to addressing each of the concerns that the Conference Committee has discussed thus far. Reading, I know literacy has been a big thing that has been coming up on this. A larger scale of research study shows that the presence of at least one Black teacher in K through five is related to statistically significant higher test scores for Black elementary students reading. Special education, an abundance of research shows that the overrepresentation of Black students in the special education is a large part due to lack of Black teachers that leads to many students being misidentified and mislabeled. Families and students with special needs who are disproportionately families of color especially deserve more equitable access to diverse teachers who reflect on students' diversity, as the legislator stated, was needed when amending several statutes back in 2016. Persistent opportunity and achievement gaps. Research is clear that more racially and ethnically representative teaching force is more effective teaching force at closing the gaps, but much more needs to be done to diversify this profession. Student mental health, which has been what we have been talking about in the last 2 years, and just to note that I'm a mental health clinician, and mental health was a real issue before the pandemic crisis, and then the pandemic hit, and now it's a real crisis that we need to deal with and we can't turn away from. The students who have and are experiencing trauma and mental health challenges need adults who can relate to and they can trust. And increasing the percentage of teachers of color is crucial to meeting diverse students' mental health needs. Discipline disparities and solutions, not suspensions, which is something that Chair Richardson has talked about and has led the way. Black, brown, and indigenous students are disproportionately disciplined by teachers who don't represent their racial and ethnic backgrounds. And increasingly, the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers will improve the relationship and student engagement necessary to reducing discipline issues in classrooms and schools that are too often eventually lead to increased crime and expensive incarceration. ELL. English language and multilingual learners, having more teachers of various racial, ethnic, and linguistic background helps build linguistic bridges for multilingual students and their families to learn English. Increased investment made last year were very important, but only half of what's needed to move the needle and start increasing the percentage of teachers of color. Increasing teachers of color and American Indian teachers by just one percentage point requires a net gain of 630 additional TASI in the profession. At a current rate, with the current funding levels, it will take us approximately 50 years for all students to have equitable access to diverse teachers who reflect on students' diversity. And as the legislator stated, shall be provided to students when amending several statutes in 2016. Important policy change that cost no money are needed to strengthen grant programs, maximize return on increased state investment, and increase accountability for districts to make systemic change that will close the gap and save money. They are based on extensive stakeholder feedback over many years and represent agreement of what's needed among a wide range of education and community stakeholder groups that don't always agree on other education issues. Increasing the percentage of teachers of color can address the overall teacher shortage. If students today had equitable access to diverse teachers, there would be approximately 22,000 BIPOC teachers in Minnesota. There are fewer than 3,000. With that, Mr. Chair, I highly encourage people, both this House and the Senate, to adopt the policy provisions as well as to continue some of the funding that we really need to increase teachers of color. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to share some highlights, particularly related to policy. And I wanted to start with some issues that are just top of mind for me personally. Last night on the House floor, we held space and had a pretty emotional tribute to the 10 innocent people who were brutally killed and the three that were wounded in Buffalo, New York. And the reports and allegations that are coming out of that incident are really chilling. It's alleged that a suspect published a 180-page document that repeated a series of white supremacist ideologies and racist conspiracy theories as justification for a premeditated plan to search out as many Black people as possible and kill them. There's allegations he drove more than 200 miles to a place with a high Black population. There's reports that the N-word was visibly emblazoned on the barrel of the gun as he massacred people on film. And there's also allegations that he apologized to a white person for almost shooting them before moving on to attack Black shoppers in the store. When we talk about the impacts of racism and we talk about racism as a public health crisis, it's because we've watched Black people in our communities targeted for the color of their skin with deadly consequences in our lifetime. And this type of white supremacist hate has invaded our schools. And it's invaded our sports leagues as well here in Minnesota. In Minnesota, violent hate crimes are on the rise, and there are too many viral examples to name of students who have been targeted in our schools, on our sports teams, because of the color of their skin. In committee, we heard the heartbreaking testimony of a second grader who was targeted for the color of her skin and who was subjected to hateful speech. And she shared the devastating impact that that had on her personally as a second grader. These type of hate crimes, the experiences that our students are having in our classroom and on our sports teams, they're too numerous to name. But these actions are designed to send a message to the entire Black and Brown community that you're a target for the immutable characteristics of the color of your skin, that you're unwelcome, that you're not valued, that you're hated, that you and your loved ones are not safe for no other reason than the color of your skin. We cannot ignore the impacts of trauma related to racism. It's a contributor to our mental health crisis. It's a risk factor for suicidal ideation, a risk factor for death by suicide, and there's also links between racism and risk factors for substance use disorders. If our schools are not welcoming and inclusive places for Black, Latinx, Indigenous, and Asian students and school staff, we're not living up to the promise that every student should have the opportunity to thrive and succeed in that state. So I want to lift up the malicious and sadistic conduct policy provisions that are in the policy bill. And this would be an opportunity for us to send a united message to our students, to our teachers, and to the state overall that Minnesota will not be a safe haven for white supremacist ideology or for hate. I want to expand on the mental health pieces because we know that racism is an impact, is one of the direct impacts to mental health. But we know that we are seeing on a wide range that there are a number of traumatized school staff who are trying to support traumatized students. And we really have come to a perfect storm. And I want to lift up Superintendent Lewandowski's words because she carries around with her a folder of over the last 10 years of all of the different op-eds that she's written, all of the different times that she's come to speak before us as legislators, and the number of times that she's sounded warnings about the concerns. And we are in that space right now, and it is incumbent upon us to ensure that we are supporting the mental health and well-being of our students and of our school staff as well. And if we do not do this work, we're going to continue to lose good teachers. We're going to continue to lose people to suicide. And we are going to continue to have schools that remain in a constant state of crisis. A couple other things that I want to lift up is the opioid overdose deaths in Minnesota and across the nation have again hit all-time highs. The opiate antagonist language in the bill to allow schools to be able to have Narcan and other antagonists on site is really critical, knowing that that substance use disorder crisis continues. Yesterday was the anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. And I just want to remind people, when we talk about the Teacher of Color bill, all students do better when they have access to diverse teachers. The financial literacy bill, the ethnic studies bill, and civics are also really important as well. Students who get financial literacy have higher credit scores, they're less delinquent on their bills. Those who get access to ethnic studies have improved academic performance, improvements in attendance, reductions in truancy, and increased probabilities of graduating. I want to lift up the PSEO gag rule language in here, which is also bipartisan work as well. And I should note that the financial literacy bill and civics bill are also bipartisan efforts as well, to ensure that students can know all the options that are available to them, and to also ensure that when students make the decision to go and attend college, that their grades are going to be weighted similarly to when they're taking college within the schools. The Metro Deaf School provisions, I think, are really critical to ensure that the Metro Deaf School can continue to provide the excellent service that they are providing. Again, another bipartisan bill. The Special Education Due Process Prep Time, Indigenous Peoples Day, ensuring religious freedom with the sacred tobacco policy provisions. And I also want to lift up the school discipline disparities as well, because it's an important factor to ensure that our kids are in school, to ensure that the literacy investments that we make are going to reach all students, not just some. We need to ensure that students with disabilities and our Black and Indigenous and other students of color have the opportunity to take advantage of those investments as well. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the finance pieces. I know that many of them have been spoken to, but I do want to talk about the importance of closing the special education cross-subsidy, the EL cross-subsidy. And as a former Freedom School teacher, I would be remiss if I did not call out the need to support after-school programming. It's also important that we are thinking about our early learners and the early learning scholarships, and also ensuring that all of our students have access to meals. So with that, thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Chair Richardson, thank you for that. And thank you for opening with the comments on the Terrorist Act in Buffalo, New York. I just want to drive home before we ask Ms. Parra to come forward and touch on any remaining policy items, the ethnic studies proposal that the House has in their provision. Senator Eichhorn, there are significant differences between the House and the Senate on issues around gun violence. And we're not going to settle those this year. We're not going to settle those in the Education Finance Committee. But the young man accused of that mass killing last weekend was 18 years old. 18. And it's Buffalo, New York, but it's also Mother Emanuel in Charleston. It's Tree of Life in, I believe that was Philadelphia. It's countless incident and countless incident across the country of a growing hatred, a growing division. And it's our responsibility as leaders in our communities to find tools to push back against that. It's a rejection of the promise of this country that has been fought for hundreds of years. And the ethnic studies provisions and a number of the other provisions that Chair Richardson and Representative Hassan touched on are the way we in the education system can try to, through education, bridge those differences, bridge those divides, and help to prevent further incidents such as we saw this last weekend and have seen growing over the years. So I urge the Senate to deeply consider those. Ms. Pera, Chair Richardson did a remarkable job of... Chair Richardson did a remarkable job of touching on policy items, but if you could please highlight any that she did not touch on or expand to clarify any comments, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I assume it's the no-cost fiscal items that you'd like me to talk about.
That's correct. Thank you, Ms. Pera.
Mr. Chair and members, the House offer includes the American Indian package, and that includes a number of provisions in Article 1, Sections 25 to 28, Article 2, Sections 1, 27, 53 to 65, 72, 74, and Article 3, Section 10. I'm going to just kind of hit those in sort of at a high level, and then if there are questions about those, we can go over those. It also includes Indigenous Peoples Day, which would replace the observance of Columbus Day. Article 1, Section 5 would increase the maximum pay that school board members that are employed by a school district can earn. Article 1, Sections 10 to 16, 29, and 30 to 32 relates to online learning. Those are changes relating to the approval of programs and supplemental programs. Article 1, Sections 22 and 24 modifies the definition of what are called SLAFE students. Those are students with limited or interrupted formal education. Section 25 in Article 1 is the definition of American Indian student based on the state count, and that's carried through in a number of other provisions in the House bill, just making sure that it's that state definition rather than the federal definition. Article 1, Section 41 requires that compensatory revenue be spent at the generating site. The increased teacher of color policies that Chair Richardson and Vice Chair Hassan touched on are in Articles 2 and Articles 3. Tribal data sharing is in Article 2, Section 1, that allows data about American Indian students to be shared with the American Indian tribes. Then there are a number of student discipline provisions. Some of them relate to pupil withdrawal agreements, which are defined in the House bill, and then it requires reporting on the pupil withdrawal agreements, and you'll see those in Article 2, Sections 2, 32, 34, and 39 to 40. There are also several provisions relating to ethnic studies, and those are in Article 2. There's in Article 2, Section 3, Section 8, and Section 10. Article 2, Section 7 relates to the Department of Education's authority to revise academic standards. Indigenous Education for All is in Article 2, Section 8, Paragraphs A and B. Physical education standards, delaying the implementation of new standards, Article 2, Section 8. And then in Article 2, Section 10, there are changes relating to personal finance, making that a requirement, and also instruction in civics. Article 2, Sections 14 and 44 is the recess language, limiting when recess can be taken away from a student as a form of punishment. Article 2, Section 23 removes above and below grade level questions on the MCAs. Article 2, Section 27 prohibits American Indian mascots. Article 2, Section 28 defines the multi-tiered systems of support. Article 2, Sections 29 to 31 modify definitions that are used in the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act. Those are definitions of dismissal, in and out of school suspension, and non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices. Article 2, Section 3 limits dismissal of students in kindergarten through grade 3. Article 2, Sections 34 to 38 and 40 to 43 contain a number of policies relating to non-exclusionary discipline requiring that it generally requiring that it be used before a student is dismissed. Article 2, sections 46 to 50, contains the changes to the PSEO that Chair Richardson referenced, including removal of the gag rule. Article 2, section 60, allows students to wear tribal regalia at graduation ceremonies. Article 2, section 68 to 71, currently restrictive procedures are prohibited for students in special education or when they are used, certain requirements must be met. These provisions broaden that to students that don't receive special education services. Article 2, section 72, allows American Indian students to have sacred tobacco in school. Article 3, section 5, requires mental illness training for school administrators. Article 3, section 6 allows teachers that are tier 1 teachers to be in the same bargaining unit as other teachers. Article 3, sections 18 and 19 require remaining QCOMP funds to be spent on QCOMP purposes. Article 3, section 25, sorry, one second here. It requires collective bargaining over class sizes in school districts and charter schools, student testing and student to personnel ratios in the school districts. Article 4, section 10, just that paragraph I relates to admissions to the Metro Deaf School. Article 6, section 4 is the molestic and sadistic conduct prohibition that Chair Richardson mentioned. Article 6, Section 6 allows schools to maintain a supply of opiate antagonists. Article 6, Section 7 requires schools to do mental health screening if they receive student support personnel aid, which is one of the items on the spreadsheet that Ms. Solvay went through. Article 8, Section 2 makes changes to the summer food service program and child and adult care food program. Article 9, Section 1 is the tribal Head Start allocation and expanded uses of Head Start funding. And Mr. Chair, that is everything.
Thank you, Ms. Perra. I appreciate that. Ms. Mock? Ms. Mock, there's, I know, provisions in the early childhood portions of the bill of our offer. Could you help us with that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. There is an A43 amendment that makes changes to the bill, and that amendment does two main things. The first thing is that it drops the mixed delivery voluntary pre-kindergarten program from the bill and instead makes permanent the 4,000 voluntary pre-kindergarten seats that would otherwise expire at the end of fiscal year 23. The second thing that A43 amendment does is that it removes a priority in the bill for early learning scholarships. In the bill, House File 4300, the fourth engrossment, there's a priority for scholarships to allow children who are from age birth to three as a priority for the scholarships. And this, the A43 amendment removes that priority group. And those are the changes in the A43.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mock and Senator Eichhorn, the provision around making sure that the voluntary pre-kindergarten slots that we approved again last year are made permanent is an important stability item for families. It's good that folks with little four-year-olds in a pre-kindergarten program are secure in their knowledge that they're 2 and 3-year-olds will be able to access the same program and have opportunities to be well prepared for kindergarten when that comes. I know, Senator Eichhorn, that there's some places of agreement or possible agreement between the House and the Senate on policy provisions. I think of the provision Chair Richardson raised on the Metro Deaf School, an extremely obviously unique charter school, and also the Recess for All provision. And I want to thank Senator Chamberlain and Senator Duckworth for their work there. Are there policy provisions in either the House or the Senate bill that the Senate would like to discuss further at this time, sir?
Well, thank you, Chair Davney. We appreciate for the public and for our Senate members for you guys to have gone over the bill. We appreciate staff for doing that. We're not prepared to take anything up today. What our plan was to listen, to learn, to understand what you've offered. We'll take this back to Senator Chamberlain, have some discussions with him as well. We think he should be involved in anything that happens going forward, and potentially give you guys some kind of counteroffer going forward. I think we are still quite a bit apart. Our direction from leadership was to try to work on what we certainly agree on, and that's the literacy and the cross-subsidy piece. As we've talked to the groups that we all see in the back of the room at all of our hearings, you know, the number one thing we heard from them and their members is give us something for the cross-subsidy. We didn't hear about a lot of the other of the stuff. While some of it certainly has merits, what we heard the number one thing about is cross-subsidy, and that's why in the previous offer from the Senate, you saw that big push towards cross-subsidy. So that's where we're at. We will take what you've given us today under advisement. The discussion has been helpful, and we'll talk with Senator Chamberlain, and you can probably expect something from us hopefully later today, with Senator Chamberlain being out of the office today. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we can get that done sooner than later, but if you just bear with us as we talk that through with him and see where we can continue to find some agreement with you.
Listen, learn, and understand. I like it, Senator. Senator Duckworth. You'd ask for recognition.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And speaking of listening, learning, and understanding, and what Senator Eichhorn mentioned, us just coming and listening and trying to gain some perspective from the House and square that with where the Senate stands, I would like to share just some of my thoughts based on what we've heard today. And I certainly don't speak for Senator Chamberlain by any means, but I will provide some additional context, I think, regarding what the Senate has put forward. First and foremost, I feel compelled to say that obviously we wholeheartedly agree that there's no place for racism, discrimination, white supremacy in our schools. I am a product of Minnesota public schools, and I can tell you I graduated knowing all those things were terribly wrong. So that being said, I think when we looked at some of the policy and some of the things that were funded last year, like aspects of the Teachers of Colors bill, the aspects of Grow Your Own programs, there is agreement there. We've worked together on those on the past, and we do see value in that. We understand that combating those things are absolutely critical. When I was first elected to the school board a few years ago, I learned there's an entirely different language that's spoken as it relates to our public schools here in Minnesota. I learned about the mystifying general education formula. I learned about the special education cross subsidy. And two of the biggest takeaways I had from my time on the school board and working with superintendents, our districts, our teachers, parents, all of the expert professionals that keep our public schools running, is that the general ed formula and the special education cross subsidy were two of the main, most important, critical aspects of where the state could help. And last year, with your help and with the partnership of the House and Governor, we did do a substantial modification and increase to the general education formula. And this year, we're proposing that we do the same when it comes to the special education cross-subsidy. There's no shortage of good ideas and noble causes that we like to talk about and discuss here at the state level. But what I can tell you is nobody knows their school districts better than those school boards, those superintendents, those teachers, those communities, and those parents. And so if we put a large focus in a substantial portion of this funding toward tackling the special education cross subsidy, what that then allows our districts to do is figure out what other things they want to invest in now that they have those additional resources at their disposal. If we substantially increase the funding for the special education cross subsidy, districts can then look at mental health, counselors, ELL, pre-K, early learning, after school, and best determine based on their specific district needs how they would like to address those and how they would like to assign or divert those resources in that funding. So I think that allowing them that ability is absolutely critical. As far as some of the policy and some of the additional mandates, like I mentioned before, many of them good causes, noble ideas, but I keep falling back to the state of our schools currently, and our teachers and our paraprofessionals and everybody that is working exhausting hours, long days, trying to figure out how we help many of our students get to where they need to be, especially after the last couple of years, whether it's right or wrong. They are doing everything they possibly can to help every student that's under their charge get to where they need to be academically. And to add more to their plate, to burden them with more policy and mandates at this time, I think would be doing them, we would be making their job a little bit more challenging, and we would be stretching them even thinner. So as well as intended some of those policies and mandates may be, for me it's an issue of timing, and it's just allowing our teachers and educators the freedom and flexibility to do what they do best, which is dive in, wrap their arms around our kids, and get them to where they need to be. I'll stick with the medical analogy. You know, if somebody is suffering from heart failure, a broken bone, lacerations, they're having trouble breathing, and they've got a few sprains, well, we wouldn't try to just fix all of those partially. What we would do is we would double down and focus on the most critical. And I think in this case, what we've heard from just about every stakeholder out there is the most critical thing we can do, the most meaningful thing, the most impactful thing we can do right now is look at that special education cross-subsidy. I think $950 million invested in that versus $300 million, or 40% crack at the cross-subsidy versus 18%, would be extremely, extremely meaningful for our districts and afford them that the freedom and flexibility with the resources they need to best meet the needs of the kids and families in their districts. So appreciate the conversation, the context today, the thought process behind where the House stands. Hopefully that gives you some context and let you know where we stand or why we're approaching it the way we are. And I'm confident and hopeful that when this is all said and done, especially if we focus on literacy and that special education cross-subsidy, we can walk away with something extremely meaningful and impactful for our districts. Thank you.
Senator Eichhorn, thank you for that. And let me assure you that the House is not looking to burden schools and staff at this time. We are looking to provide them the resources they need to do exactly what you've described, wrap their hands around those kids who are walking in every morning and support them and teach them and help them to learn. So things like the mental health supports for both students and staff are key to a learning situation. And things like the English Language Learner Cross Subsidy, everything you said about expanding locals' flexibility about the special education cross subsidy is exactly true with the English Language Learner Cross Subsidy. It has the added bonus of being part of a comprehensive literacy approach. And I would say on some of the policy items, we touched on Monday, the non-exclusionary discipline, where we not only provide policy, but we provide funding for training for teachers and administrators to implement that policy. What we know and touched on Monday is across the state, we have significant racial disparities in who's getting disciplined and who's in the classroom and able to learn. And the question that provokes in my mind is, when you see wrong, what is your obligation to do right? Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Duckworth, I just want to say I could not agree with you more that there is nobody who understands the situation better than the administrators, the school board, and the teachers. And as an educator myself, if we stop, I am telling you, if we stop at cross-subsidy, we're making an improvement, but we are going to fall short. If we do not address the mental health needs of our students and staff, all of our work is going to be in vain. We are at a critical state right now with our students. We are at a critical state with our staff. In my district alone, I have several educators who are leaving the profession. I have one that walked out in the middle of the year, probably one of the most gifted educators I've known or had the privilege of working with, leave the profession. And we are seeing a mass exodus because we have been expected to do more and more and more with less and less and less. And we're in the profession because we care. We are deeply invested in the success of our students. And we cannot educate and be the mental health worker. We cannot educate and be the parent. We cannot do our job and meet the needs of our students as they are coming into our classrooms. without addressing these issues. And we don't have the supports. Our kids right now are coming into our classrooms not fed, homeless. And these are elementary students. These are elementary students, not just, you know, level four people or students. And we've heard the dire situations from our level four programs, our intermediaries, but it's the general public schools now too. So as I made the analogy in health, you're right. You go after the first thing, but it is simultaneously that you are addressing the underlying supports, whether it's medication or diet or exercise or whatever. In education, we have to do the same. And yes, supporting a special or taking care of some of the cross subsidy is going to free up districts, but it is not going to free them up enough to address all of their needs. And the needs are here today. I know that this is not a budget year, but we cannot stick our heads in the sand. We cannot stick our heads in the sand and pretend we'll take care of this next year, when the mental health needs are so significant now. They deserve better than that. We can't have more teachers leaving the profession because the plates are too full and our hearts are broken. You heard testimony from so many people. Our hearts are breaking because we care and we don't have the supports we need. We have the ability right now to take care of this. Leadership has given us a target of $1 billion over 3 years to do something about this. And on behalf of the educators I know and the students I love, I am asking that we do not stop at literacy and cross subsidy, because we will fall terribly short. I ran for office because I wanted to make a difference for our students and for our schools. I believe in public education. It's an obligation and it is a privilege. And I know we can do better. I know that. We are in the position to do that. Senator Eichorn, I am asking you to take this back. Please share this with Senator Chamberlain. I am not being dramatic. I am being honest. Our kids need support. Our districts need support right now. And the House bill has many provisions that go beyond just the literacy or cross subsidy that will help in that comprehensive wraparound supports that we need today. In our home budgets, we build a budget, we budget for certain costs, and yet unexpected things come up. And when they come up, we have to address them. And that's where we are in public education. We have to address this. So I really implore you, humbly implore you, for our students and our teachers, go beyond what we see in the Senate bill right now, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sandstead. Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you. Is it working? No. Is that working? Can you hear me okay?
Not well, no.
Okay. Can you hear me better? Okay.
There you go.
Thank you, I'll lean in. Thank you. Chair Dabney and members of the conference committee, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity. I think that a couple of things that I have appreciated about what I've heard, not only throughout the testifiers, but also from this committee, is the recognition that we all come to the education committees with a sense of centering students, centering families, centering our educators, and doing what we believe is the right thing to meet the needs of our students, families, and educators. And so I just appreciate people's willingness to sit on the education committee and to dig into this work, because I believe it is some of the most important work that happens at the state level. I also know, I need to turn on my video, sorry. I also understand that Senator Duckworth, to your point, I can say that as a high school social studies teacher, in my years in the classroom, the thing that I wanted to do most was to shut my door and just teach, because I did not want the things that were happening necessarily at the district level or at the state level to be coming in necessarily to my classroom, and I totally get that. And we live in a space and time where we are at a delicate balance between what we want to have for local control and what we need to be able to have as a statewide expectation for all students across the state of Minnesota. So what we need to be able to have for all students across the state of Minnesota. And I think that that's the conversation that we're trying to have today is, what do we want for all students to know and to be able to do? What do we want all districts across the state, districts and charter schools across the state, to have access to? And then where is the space and time appropriate for local control to make those local decisions? And so we are at a place where we've had systemic issues. We know that in education, we have not funded appropriately in a number of places, and the state hasn't been able to do that. And quite frankly, neither has the federal government. And the state has been asked to pick up more because the federal government has not been able to do what they have said that they needed us to do. I think we can really clearly say that. And if we can take those, I think, in every step of the space and way. But what we know is that over the past couple of years, we have heard more and more about mental health. And it has been an ongoing concern for our students. It has been something that I think existed, I can say, like back when I was in school, but we didn't talk about it. And I think that there is a healthiness in what our students are willing to talk about, to share in their experiences, and to ensure that their own students are safe. When we had the opportunity to be at the school yesterday and we're visiting with second graders, I asked the question, what is the most important thing to you? The number one thing that Freddie said was, I want to be safe, and I want my friends to be safe. And a lot of that safety doesn't necessarily come in the buildings itself. It certainly can help in the reinforcement of our buildings, but it comes in the people, and it comes in the relationships, and it comes in the mental health supports and what we're providing in our classrooms. And so the very first time I had the chance this year to give testimony on was around mental health for Chair Davney, and it was the day after we had a catastrophic event. A student died at a school. And we know that, as we've heard from the testimony, that our level four programs, our programs that have met the needs of students, are not the only level four, are not the only programs that need mental health supports. We need to provide innovative grants, for sure, and we need to provide student support personnel. We need the people, because we have gotten to a point where we have oftentimes, instead of that student support personnel, we are involving law enforcement. And in some instances, that is the right choice, and in some instances, it is not. But we need to be able to expand our student support personnel. The cross subsidies, I think, are another place in space where we think about this, is that we know that when we talk about special education students and or specialized services in special education or EL, we are actually talking about general education students first and foremost. And so when we are short in the general education formula, and when we are short in the special education cross subsidy and in the EL cross subsidy, our students who need those services are actually shorted twice. And so because of that, our districts are having to make very difficult decisions about services that they're able to provide, not only to the students who need those services and supports as mandated, not only by the federal government, but by the state, but also to ensure that what they are able to provide for every single student across their district changes. And that oftentimes comes in programming. It comes in the ability to have staff that are able and capable to be able to do that work in some of those expansions. And so that's where we have the opportunity to think about, so in addition to what our districts are able to do, what are some other ways that we can provide funding in grants and in programs that allow them to dabble, to see if this is something that they want to bring into their district as a local control decision, or if they learn that this is not the choice for them. I think looking at meals and thinking about that is another really important piece. We know that districts often also, and I'm sure that you're from your experience in your school board as well times, is that you know that there are families who cannot pay, and they do not fill out the forms. And our students are the students are the ones who suffer because their families either have not been able to or do not fill out the documents. And it is our schools who are then left holding that funding, because it is a very rare instance that you would actually go after a family to try to get that funding back. and we're putting that on the shoulders of our students. And what we need to recognize is that we can identify students without necessarily needing the forms and to be able to meet the needs of them and their meals. We know the role that that plays for them at the general level and what that means for their ability to be able to access education in academics because their cognitive abilities are able to grow because they have been fed and they are not worrying about where their next meal comes. Which also means as we think about that base, that early learning component and recognizing that when we're talking about things like literacy, we're talking about social emotional learning and growth. We are actually also talking about our youngest learners and access and the expansion of access. And so in some of the policy pieces, as well as in the budgetary pieces, ensuring that we can have those ongoing supports are incredibly important because we know that early learning is a foundational place and space. It's why the state has invested in it for the last number of years. We have been leading in that, and our opportunity is to continue to lead in that work, which builds in, I think, that foundation of thinking about then literacy itself, which has been like the topic of the conversation we have done probably more than anything else, and is sometimes in the exclusion of some of those other important pieces. And I think that we agree in the literacy, that literacy is a foundational skill that every single student across the state of Minnesota needs to have. But we also believe that if we are going to ask our educators to do more, we're going to ask that they participate in the science of reading. We are going to ask that they get the professional development that can take up to 2 years for that professional development to take hold. Then we also need to provide the ongoing support, right? The ongoing support meaning that they need to be not only trained, but then they need to have the coaching, because we also know that in best practices that if you are not coached and you are not able to have that ongoing support, that it does not it's not implemented. It's in the implementation science, and that actually is incredibly clear. There are so many pieces, I think, that we could talk about in addition to MTSS, our teachers of color and Indigenous teachers, the recognition of Indigenous education for all and ethnic studies, thinking about non-exclusionary discipline, and if you're not in the classroom, you're not going to be learning literacy or anything else. And I think that what's most important maybe is that to your point, Representative Sandstead, is that as educators, we have learned for a very long time to do more with less. If you want something sometimes for your classroom, you just buy it yourself. Our schools are in the same position as they're needing to make decisions. And that's because we've been in a position as a state that we've had to think about, or we're either going to do special education cross-subsidy or the EL cross-subsidy. We are going to provide funding for early learning or mental health supports or literacy. And I think that it does not fall far for me to recognize that in the time that we actually probably need it more than ever before, we have the funding to be able to live in the beauty of and eliminate the tyranny of or. And so what I'm thinking is that we have the opportunity to do and. We can't have a special education cross-subsidy and EL cross subsidies and mental health supports and literacy. It does eliminate the tyranny of or and brings us back to the beauty of and. And so I'm looking forward to being able to have those conversations where it also allows us to say this is what we expect for all students across the state of Minnesota and we have local control.
Thank you, Commissioner Mueller. Representative Eichhorn, just I think moving towards a closing here. I'm sorry, Senator Wieger, I didn't realize. My apologies.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I didn't mean to preempt a closing statement there, but you know, as Senator Duckworth pointed out, he wasn't speaking necessarily for the chair and for Chair Chamberlain, and neither am I. And, but would like to just offer a few some of the shared thoughts that you've had, because I know each of us cares deeply about education. That's why we're on this conference committee, why we served on policy or finance. I commend Chair Chamberlain for setting, you know, the high focus on literacy for the training, for proficiency. And I commend the House as well for showing the connection between many other programs that will increase literacy. And they are interconnected. One's mental health, their state of mind, is directly connected to their ability to read. If one is a victim of racism, that is going to shut off so many opportunities to learn when they're having to deal with the scourge of racism. Ethnic studies is important. Our increasing the teachers of color is absolutely essential. The science is so clear that students will increase their academic proficiency when the teacher more reflects their cultural values. And we've had bipartisan support. Senator Duckworth, you chief authored the proposal last year, I believe. It's interconnected on the programs that have been offered for literacy proficiency. So looking at mental health, which was a pre-COVID priority, needs to be a part of the final resolution. Early education. We talked about the patient that may have had a coronary and what's going to be done. Well, look at prevention. And what do we do early on? And what does the evidence say? It says by as early as prenatal care, but early involvement with visits with nurses and others, and providing opportunities for the family, parental involvement with those young students through many programs is going to make it highly likely that that young future scholar, that young scholar is going to be ready for kindergarten and reading proficient to third grade. That's what the evidence says. So I've worked on early ed ever since I was an intern here last millennium when Senator Hughes was the chair of the committee and when he put in some incentive programs. It works, and we need to continue to grow on that. And it shouldn't be either or. We're going to do the special ed, which, by the way, I'm very pleased that it's become a high priority now. It wasn't a month ago in the Senate, but there was the laser focus. But now that we have this opportunity to come together, which Minnesotans want us to do, we can attack a comprehensive program on literacy, proficiency, instruction, and we can recognize the many programs, effective programs, science-based programs that will contribute to meeting that goal. And we can also address the cross-subsidy and recognize the importance of ELL too. Yes, I believe Senator Weber may have championed that and others. These are bipartisan initiatives. I don't know if this group's gonna meet again. Maybe it's gonna all get kicked up to leadership. And if that's the case, so be it. I do hope that we can meet at least once more today, if not early tomorrow, and further amplify on a comprehensive program for literacy proficiency, the cross-subsidy, and I'm certain we have the ability to reach that agreement, which we have, by the way, on other areas prior to today. And let's continue to be optimistic. We are making progress. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chair, before you close, can I give some thoughts?
Senator Duckworth, thank you. Certainly.
I will be brief. And I want to hone in on something that was kind of said a few different times, which is asking our schools and our teachers to do more with less. I get that. I understand that. And when we look at the $1 billion agreed upon investment that we all have the opportunity to help our public schools with, I kind of view it as if we take that amount and we kind of chip away at it and we put some here and we put some there and a little bit goes here and some goes there and we make those decisions at the state level, I wonder how much more impactful that would be. I wonder how much more that would alleviate the do more with less if we just took a vast preponderance, almost all of that funding, and just gave it directly to the school districts and said, you do what you need to do. We trust you at your level because your district is different than my district, different than your district. They all have different needs, mental health, early learning, various cross subsidies, et cetera. Why don't we just take about $950 million of the $1 billion, give it to our districts and say, do what you know you need to do to take care of our kids. I think we're all saying that in just a variety of different ways, and we have a different thought process of how to get there. But I could tell you, as somebody that's worked at the district level and as somebody that knows plenty of teachers that would just love to shut the door and focus on their kids, let's just give them the funding and let them decide how to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, that's what the House proposes. In the mental health area, you hopefully noticed in our letter that accompanied our offer last night, we made it clear that a response from the Senate without meaningful investments in mental health would not be considered a viable proposal. We allow districts to choose which sort of student support personnel that they wish to hire. Minnesota ranks 49th in the nation in the ratio of students to school counselors. 49th. That's up from 50th, but that's not a point of comfort. We have been losing school nurses, school social workers who can help connect, not only work with students in the school, but connect them to community resources, are insufficient in our schools. It's our need as a legislature. Once we know something, we have an obligation to act and to lead. And the mental health proposals in the House bill include those level four programs across the state. We've heard powerful testimony from Independent District 287. What they had to say is true in every level four program across the state. And their ask for resources is something we should respond to. We have in the past, we can again. And we also recognize that challenges for children and families starts at the earliest ages. So include specific funding for early childhood social workers to work in that space. Absent those specific resources, we're not getting the job done. We see the need, we have the resources and the targets, and we need to take action now. Senator Eichhorn, the leadership has given us to the end of the day. And I am hopeful that we are the ones who are making the final decisions, as I said earlier. Yesterday, the Senate provided us an offer that was completed at 9:30 a.m. and was provided to us at 4 p.m. That sort of delay is not going to get this group to a decision, this group to a consensus, and this group to an agreement today. When can we expect an offer from the Senate that is responsive to the needs of students and families and school staff, responsive to the offer from the House, and moves us towards an agreement today?
Well, we first heard about your offer this morning, so we're going to take some time to digest it, as said earlier. We'll certainly have conversations, and we'll do our best to get back to you as we can.
I do hope that as we can is also as soon as possible. Given that, members, we are in recess to the call of the chair. Thank you.